Attention all you rule breakers, you misfits and troublemakers, all you free spirits and pioneers, all you visionaries and nonconformists.
Everything the establishment has told you is wrong with you is actually what's right with you. You see things others don't. You are hardwired to change the world.
Welcome to the Spiritual Activist Radio Show again. And today we're going to be interviewing Louis Elbinger. And I have to tell you, I'm a little bit of a reluctant optimist, and people like Louis can really draw me out because what he has to say and the outlook for the future of this world gives me a little hope. And if you want to find out more about Louis Elbinger, you can visit www.louiselbingerforcongress.com. Now let's speak to Louis and find out a little bit about what he has in mind. Hello, Louis. How are you doing today?
All is well, Rahasia. All is well.
Yeah. How's everything going so far?
Well, it's a journey. I'm running for office. I'm running for the office of the U.S. Representative for the 1st Congressional District of California. So this is after 28 years in the State Department, and I had retired. I'm a retired grandfather, and now I took up this adventure, let us say.
It's going to be an adventure, Louis. You know, and I have to tell you something. I have all but given up on politics until Bernie Sanders came along, and he sort of ignited a little bit of hope, although the system, I think, cheated him. And now you're coming along, but it sort of reminds me of that old saying, all it takes for bad people to do bad things is for good people to do nothing. And I think that's where we're at today. The good people are going to have to start getting out, getting off the couch, turning off the basketball game, and start getting involved. Because up to this point, we've sort of let the crazies take over the asylum. And now we're starting to pay a dear and deep price for this apathy. And Americans, we're sort of popular for our apathetic outlook on life because we've had it so comfortable. But that comfort is starting to disappear. So it's in a way, it's a good thing because it's starting to wake people up. We're never going to evolve to a higher level of consciousness. You know, like Einstein said, we're never going to solve the solutions from the same level of thinking that created the problems. So we have to take that, and it doesn't take a genius to figure this out anymore. We have to find it in ourselves to do whatever we can do with our life, inner and outer, to raise our awareness and our consciousness. And I feel that that's where you're coming from. I was looking at all of the things you've accomplished in your life. And it seems like it would take years to do this. You've stayed pretty busy. And at this point in your life, for you to come out and say, you know what? I want to do more. I find that really commendable, Louis, really commendable.
Thank you, Rahasia. And you know, I agree completely. Bernie ignited a fire in all of us. In this congressional district, which is gerrymandered to be Republican, Bernie won 10 of the 11 counties. We have 11 counties here, 8 full counties and 3 partial counties in our district. And Bernie won 10 of them. He got almost 50,000 votes. He beat Hillary Clinton by almost 5,000 votes. And that just told me that means that there's 50,000 people like me who don't feel represented in the halls of Congress. So I looked around and I thought, well, surely someone's going to stand up and step forward and take on this job. And when no one did, I realized if I don't do it, it won't get done. So that's the genesis of how I got into this. I realized if I don't step forward and do it, no one's going to do it. And there's 50,000 people in this district who voted for Bernie. That's my base. And there's a lot of young people who were excited by him. There's people who don't vote because they don't believe the ballot gives them an opportunity to express their values and interests. And there's Republicans and Democrats who are frankly disgusted with their political parties. I believe what you said is true, that Bernie was cheated out of the nomination. Donna Brazile's book Hacks talks about how she discovered the shenanigans that went on behind the scenes in the Democratic National Committee. So for all of these reasons, I feel it's essential that, as you put it, you know, that good people have to stand up and take action in order to correct the problems that we see.
So what are some of the things you would do, Lewis, to start correcting? Because you and I both know you can't go into Congress like a gangbuster, because you will get marginalized. You have to sort of ease into it and start making small changes and getting people connected to get more power in Congress. What are some of the first things you would do?
That's I'm glad you asked that question, because I've been asked before and it's a great question. There's something called the Congressional Progressive Caucus, okay? The first thing I would do is, there's 73 members of it, and Bernie Sanders as a senator, is connected with it. I would take my lead from those who are already in Congress, who are working on the issues that I care about and that Bernie Sanders is putting forward. So it's like walking into a movie that's in progress. You walk in and you have to get the plot and the characters before you can begin to take action. I have lots of experience in this because I've run embassies and consulates around the world for 28 years. When I go to a new country in a new assignment, I don't come in and start making changes. I come in and I start learning what's going on in the past. And I learn the plot and the characters. And then I begin to see where we can improve. And so that's my approach to this issue. I'm gonna start making contact now with the Progressive Caucus, and I'm going to search for their endorsement. I want to come in from the first congressional district as an ally of the Congressional Caucus, taking our lead from what's going on in the Bernie Sanders Senator Sanders campaign. What legislation is possible? Remember, they say politics is the art of the possible. So that's where I'm coming from.
Yeah, it's very good. It's like the old saying goes, seek first to understand, then to be understood. Because if you go in just trying to make everybody understand you, it creates a conflict and everybody gets defensive, you know. So how many languages do you speak?
Well, my bachelor's degree is in linguistics. And I've studied 8 languages. I studied Russian for a year at the Foreign Service Institute, and I used it in Ashgabat, Turkmenistan, when I was the administrative officer at the U.S. Embassy there. So, of course, if you don't use a language, you lose it. I've forgotten a lot of these languages. But I studied Chinese when I was an undergraduate because I wanted to learn how to read the Tao Te Ching in the original language. And that got me interested in languages in general. I speak some Arabic, some Russian, some Hindi. When I was in an ashram in India, I taught myself to read Sanskrit, read Devanagari script. And that's probably the most interesting thing, is that the different scripts that I can read, Cyrillic script for Russian and Arabic and Chinese and Hindi, and of course, a little bit of French and German. So these are the languages that I know most about.
You know why this is so important, Lewis, is because I've been in the process of learning Portuguese because my wife is from Brazil. And as you learn a language, it rewires your brain. And as it rewires your brain to that language, you're able to understand the conceptual thinking that brought about certain concepts and ideas with those people. So if you read a translated language, say of Russian, you can read the translation, but if you don't speak the language, you're not really getting where they're coming from. And I think we all need to do this. Like if you go to Europe or any place else, they speak 2 or 3 languages. It's only here that we speak English, and that's about it. But we need to start reaching out and rewiring our brains, because we need to think differently, seriously differently, and this would help.
I fully agree with you, Rahasia. Absolutely. I describe myself as a planetary citizen, a citizen of the world. And I've been fortunate enough, and it's an essential part of education, to travel around the world and to live with people, not just speak their language, eat their food, wear their clothes, and listen to them with an open heart to understand the perspective from which they're coming. When you do that, it becomes much, much easier to have sympathy, kindness, and compassion for other people. And then you develop the ability to have different perspectives. That's why I see my candidacy as bridging the polarized gap that divides this country. I've got three messages: government with heart, vote your conscience, and bridging the divide. Bridging the divide means taking the good ideas from the polarized, the red and the blue ends of the political spectrum, and coming up with the creative solutions that are going to satisfy all of us.
Yeah, you know, I've been reading a little bit of Hegel lately, a philosopher, and one of his primary foundations is the fact that we live in a polarized reality, 3D reality. Whenever you come up with an idea, no matter how pure, how just, how logical, it always inevitably brings up the polar opposite. And we have this tendency to think that the polar opposite is wrong, but it's not. It's the friction of sitting down and communicating with these two ideas that was created by what we might call a positive idea and a negative idea, not meaning that they're right or wrong, but it's the communication coming through with those two ideas that actually manifest the truth of what you're looking for.
This makes sense to me. I understand this. This is the idea of it's like a triangle. You have the thesis, the antithesis, and then you get the synthesis. And synthesis is the harmony that we're all searching for. People are tired of arguing. People are tired of this polarization. They really want to come together. And we can find that, the points upon which we agree, the points upon which it's the heart. This is what government with heart means. The heart is the center of the human body. And it's also the balance. Green, it's interesting. Green is the color in the center of the spectrum of visible light. It means balance, growth, abundance, healing, and nature. And those are the qualities that we want to bring to government, balance especially.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because...
And of course, it starts from within, Rahasi. I think you know this. And
you'll have to say that over again.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Say that over.
I
what you just said
from the beginning?
Yeah.
I said green is the color in the center of the spectrum of visible light. It means balance, growth, abundance, healing, and nature. And these are the qualities that we want to bring into government. Government with heart means coming from a place of balance, finding the things that unite us. I know from personal experience, having traveled around the world for 70 years, that there's more that unites us than divides us. People, as a rule, are generally kind, respectful, civil, compassionate, and sympathetic. I know this from my experience. This is not something I read in a book or saw in a movie. This is something I've experienced by having lived with people in different countries again and again and again.
You want to hear something interesting, Lewis? I know several people up in the Mount Shasta area, and I told them about you that, you know, we were going to do an interview. And I said, so what do you think about Lewis Elbinger? They said, all three of them said the same thing. Oh, he's the real deal. Those two words, he's the real deal. So, you know, you have a lot of people up there that really know you well, and really respect you a lot. So, Lewis, let's say you're voted in, you're a congressman, you're going to start dealing with the system, and I think we can agree that the system is broken, let alone corrupt, you know? What do you think some of the first obstacles are going to be that you're going to have to deal with and make compromise. Because here's the problem. It seems like everybody that goes into politics, they have to compromise a little. And the people in Washington are very, very intelligent. They will get you to compromise in such a way that that compromise can be used against you later. So when you go there, how susceptible are you going to be to compromise?
Well, first of all, I believe in term limits. I would like to put forward the idea of that a congressperson should only serve two terms, and then we can have citizen congresspeople who come in and bring citizen concerns instead of corporate concerns and Wall Street concerns. So I'm coming from the point of view of the citizen. Also, I want to have working groups back here in the district. When issues come up, there's about, I made a list of about 90 legislative issues, both foreign and domestic, and I want to group those issues into clusters and get working groups back here. It's not just, it's not Lewis Elbinger and what he thinks. Really, Rehasia, this campaign is not about me and it's not about Bernie Sanders. It's about the Bernie Sanders movement. So my whole point is to put the movement forward. I'll, of course, work closely with Senator Sanders in order to make sure that our movement, that the movement is represented, our ideals are aligned. Now, having said that, there are differences between me and Bernie Sanders. I'm not a socialist and I'm not a revolutionary. I say drop the R in revolution. I'm interested in evolution. I like what Barbara Marx Hubbard calls herself, a conscious evolutionary. And I call myself a conscious progressive. So I'm not going to compromise. I'm not going to deviate from the positions that would be taken by a conscious progressive. It would be short-sighted. It's like going into debt on your credit card. You know, after a certain point, you get buried by it. So I'll vote no if I don't agree. I would like to. There's a lot of cases where I'll vote no if the vote is there's 435 congresspeople. If the vote is 434-1, I might be the one. But on the other hand, if I find that the members of the Congressional Progressive Caucus come to an agreement on positions, I'll go along with that because I see myself as part of a movement. This is not an ego thing. I'm not doing this. I'm a grandfather. I could be staying home and playing with my granddaughter. You know, I'm not doing this because of an ego need. I'm doing this for my granddaughter. I want to leave the world better than I found it. And it seems to me all my life I've been fighting these same fights. I started when I was 15 and the war in Vietnam was going on. And here I am, I'm 70 years old, and we're still fighting some of the battles that occurred back then. And what I said to my daughter, and I said to say to my granddaughter, is leave the world a little bit better than you found it. And this is my way of trying to do that. So I hope I answered your question. It was kind of a roundabout way of answering the question. But I'm not. It's not about me and what I think. It's about the movement and where the movement can and should go.
Right. Yeah, you brought up Barbara Marx Hubbard. I interviewed her a while back, and she started talking about the tipping point. And she's saying that we are the tip of the tipping point. And I think one of the things that people don't understand about the tipping point, if you picture a scale, you can start piling a lot of stuff on the one scale. Nothing moves until you get to that tipping point. When you get to the tipping point, every little thing makes a difference at that point. And I think we're at that point right now because environmentally, financially, government-wise, social-wise, our air quality, water quality, food quality, we have completely let corporations take over too much of our government decision-making with revolving doors, for one. And this is not good because they have to feed their bottom line. But with all of the people waking up, because we're not the 99%, we're the 99.99%. There's most of us out here can make a difference if we come together. And now I see what enthuses me about you, for instance, my magazine, the radio show, I see little differences. If I put out an article about a certain little thing, I get so much feedback. It makes a difference right now. It wakes people up. Like I did an article about geoengineering back, about 7 years ago. Nobody was looking up to see the chemtrails. And after I did the article, people started going, okay, what are you talking about? And they started looking up and realizing that we are being sprayed. And of course, recently the government has admitted to this, you know, because you can hide something only so long. Little things about GMO foods. We had an article in, I think in this issue, with Pam Larry. She's fighting the fight right on the front lines of waking people up to this. We can't be genetically altering our foods to where our body, our biology, isn't recognizing it as a food source. There's so many things right now that is right at the tipping point, and people are starting to wake up, even about vaccinations. I have a hard time saying too much for or against it, but I say one thing. You know, when that baby is a newborn baby, the last thing you should be doing is puncturing it with 20 vaccinations. One of them is for hepatitis C, and it's only good for 5 years. So unless that newborn is going to go out partying and leading a wild life before kindergarten, there's no reason for it. These are red flags that people are starting to look at and going, hey, wait a minute, now this just doesn't make sense. So I think you're coming in at a really good time with a really good message, because I think people are susceptible to listening now because they're getting hungry for truthful information.
Well, I fully agree with you, Rahasi. It's interesting how you and I have grown and evolved in the same way. I made a note of several points that you made. Tipping point. Yes, we're at a tipping point. I believe, and I get a lot of my energy and a lot of my positive energy from the idea that when I wake up in the morning, more people wake up than went to sleep the night before. I see that when I was 15 years old, I felt that only 10% of the population thought and felt the way I did. I felt like a minority, and I never knew that I wouldn't live my whole life as a minority. Today, I don't feel that way. Today, I feel that between 25% and 33% of the population sees and feels and analyzes and perceives things the way I do. I feel that there's an army of people out there who get it, as we say. And I don't feel alone. And of course, over the course of my life, I've seen the Berlin Wall has fallen, the internet has risen, and things have changed in what I would call a positive way. When people talk about the 99% versus the 1%, I dismiss that. We are 100%. All of us are in this together. There's no, it's not that we, us and them mentality is what I call 20th century thinking. We are 18 years into the 21st century, and we should start behaving that way. And we can do that. We're all in this together. There's lots of people who have money who don't know what to do with it. They need that guidance. They need the input, and they need the collaboration with people to channel the resources into things that we want to go. And one thing about my campaign that I'm very proud of is my science advisory board. I'm very concerned about the issue you raised about the food, the GMOs, and the agriculture. My friend and colleague Stephen Breedlove there in Chico is very eloquent, and he's a practitioner of what we were calling regenerative agriculture, and he's on my team. There's a gentleman here in Mount Shasta, Kim Mattson, is an environmentalist. He's on my team. There's another Californian. He's down in Ojai right now. Aaron Ogden is also in charge of a huge piece of land that he's experimenting with to find the regenerative ways in which we can make the soil healthy. The health of the soil is connected to the health of the civilization. And my attention, my voice, this is a rural district I'm in. And it's a beautiful agricultural planet that we're on. And we all have to be thinking about getting that food back so that it's delicious and nutritious for us and for our children. This is what I call stewardship of planet Earth and consideration for the seventh generation.
There's a really, you've probably watched it, but if not, you should watch it. There's a really good documentary out called Symphony of the Soil. And they talk about this very thing, how we can bring our soil back. Because right now, it's in terrible shape. We have lost up to 40% of our arable soil on this planet. But now they know, they're doing a lot of research down in Davis. They know now that we can bring this soil back in such a way that we can plant organic foods. And now we know that the Monsanto way, using Roundup, it's a terrible way to go. We've produced these super strains of weeds that nothing kills anymore. But all of this can be brought back. And all we have to do, I think a lot of innovation comes from universities. Once they start getting grants to do studies on alternative energy, bringing the soil back, agriculture, we just need the intent and the drive and enough people to see that this is what we need. Because I have a positive view of the future. I really do. But not so positive that I can just close my eyes. I mean, I have a positive view that I can drive down the street and it's going to be safe, but not to the point I'm just going to close my eyes and let faith and belief carry me through. You know, I like what they say in the Middle East. They say, believe in Allah, but tie up your camel first. This balance.
Yeah, trust in Allah.
Yeah. There's this balance that we have to start reconciling with. And I see this in religions. You know, we have two full-page ads from Seventh-day Adventist Hospital. This is amazing because we're an alternative health and living magazine. But they put 1 year of full page in our magazine last year, Dinner with the Doctors. And they got so many of our people going to talk with the doctors, these allopathic doctors, and asking them some really hard questions. Hey, what about vaccinations? What about vitamins? What about nutrition? And the doctors started getting back with the administration and saying, hey, these alternative people are asking us some tough but really good questions. You know, we need to start looking into this because this is the heartbeat of the community. So they, and then when they placed two full-page ads, I asked them at the hospital, I'm just curious, why is it that you're doing this? You know, I'm glad you're doing it because it helps us out financially and it's good for our people. But they said, no, it's your people, your readers. Your readers are so alert and they're going to our meetings and asking some questions that we've been wanting to ask our doctors. We've been wanting to ask them, hey, look into this. You know, stop just saying that, for instance, vaccinations. That's a hot, really charged topic, especially with mothers. And they're either cold or hot on the subject. But I'm telling you, Lewis, every single person I've talked to that's for vaccinations have never read the science. And they all say the same thing. Well, if you read the science, you would know that vaccinations is okay. But all the people that's against vaccinations have read the science. They've read the research. Yeah. They know how the research is done. There's no blind studies. There's no placebo group. The placebo group gets aluminum in their shots also. People like William Thompson, the lead researcher at CDC, you know, his career is over, but he had to speak out and say, hey, we're hiding too many of the results and the research results on this issue. And people want the truth. You know, they just want the truth. One thing that's going through my mind right now is, I think his name is Carlson Tucker on Fox News. The only time I watch Fox News is to see what they're not talking about, because that's actually what's happening. But Tucker, every Wednesday, he's been doing a series on the environment. Like one was on the pollution in the environment and the need to start looking at this. Well, he just did another one, and it was about the geoengineering. And the last one he did was about UFOs. And he shows the clip that the government put up, that New York Post talked about first. This has been a few months ago now. He says, you know, I used to really make fun of the UFO community, but not anymore. He says, and the reason I'm not doing it is because we have pilots that are trained observers, pilots that have their finger on the trigger. They're protecting us, and they're up there seeing things they can't explain. There's radar confirmation. Right. There's visual confirmation. Something is in our atmosphere that we don't know about, and it's an unidentified flying object. Whether it's an alien from Zeta Reticuli or from the inner Earth, this is where it gets into the conspiracy stories. But the truth is, something is flying around up there and has been for many, many, many years. So I see even traditional news now is starting to touch on these subjects. And that's a good sign.
I agree with you. I see the same phenomenon that you're describing. You've touched on three issues that are very controversial and would kill a politician's career in the past, but may not in the future. Vaccinations, chemtrails, and the UFO phenomenon. Dr. Stephen Greer has done a lot of research on that. Let me say this clearly. If I don't know something, I say, I don't know. I'm not pretending to know. And since I don't know, I have an open mind. I keep my mind open to that in a scientific way to new information and to it's called critical thinking. Well, I used to teach at the U.S. Army Command and General Staff College. I taught a course called The Diplomatic Instrument of Power. In order to teach there, you have to take a course on how to teach there. And what I learned about the military education system is that they promote and they teach critical thinking. So I've been trained in critical thinking, and I've taught critical thinking, and we need to apply critical thinking to these very controversial issues. There was what I would call a conspiracy to shut down discussion, very discussion. If you said chemtrails, vaccinations, or aliens, right away someone would come and say, no, you can't talk about that. Well, excuse me, we can talk about that with respect, with civility, because that's a key point in my campaign, civilized discourse. We have respect for each other, and we listen to each other. The opposite of demonizing people is listening to them. My friends Libby and Len Troutman in San Mateo say, an enemy is someone whose story you have not heard. So if we maintain an attitude of critical thinking, and we have the humility to admit that we don't know everything, and we listen with our hearts, we can come to those harmonious, creative solutions that I was talking about.
Yeah, and this is important in reference to what you're saying about the 99%, we're 100%, is because I really don't, maybe I'm being naive, but I really don't think the dark forces, the deep state, I don't think they get up, some of them maybe, but I don't think they get up of a morning saying, today I'm going to go out and do evil. They truly think that they're doing the right thing for the right reasons. So it's up to us to show them different reasons and the effects of what they're doing. How is this working? And to do that, we have to try to understand where they're coming from. And I think you and I, we could talk about every problem on the face of the planet. And there's not one of those problems that wouldn't be relieved by taking down the population. This is another hot subject, but I think that there are programs. I think the cures for cancer are being withheld. I know people that have cured themselves from cancer in Mexico and in places in Europe. I know they're out there. They're being suppressed. One of the reasons would be naturally cancer research is a multi-billion dollar industry. The drugs that we use in cancer is insanely crazy expensive, but I think there is a at least on some level of awareness or consciousness, the idea that we have to take down the population. Now, if we could go to these people and say, you know what, we agree to this, that this is true. I think every evolutionary planet that reaches the top of the food chain has no enemies. The population goes crazy. Like out where I live, if there's too many rabbits, the coyotes come in. If there's too many coyotes, they die off from starvation. Nature balances that out. But we have actually paid people to have children that aren't taking care of themselves in the system. And that's a lack of education. And if we could make these politicians understand that, okay, let's look at this problem and come up with some humane situations to where we can guide the population in the right direction through education.
I like what you said. You were talking about people don't get up in the morning thinking evil. I agree with you. I think 90% of what we call evil is really ignorance. There is maybe 10% of genuine evil. But Alice Bailey, who I studied with the Arcane School many years ago, she said, quote, "Evil is good which has outlived its usefulness." And I like that, unquote. I like that quote because it takes the judgment out of evil and lets you look at evil with a more dispassionate eye. Evil is good that has outlived its usefulness. You're absolutely right. These people who are doing what you and I might call evil, they don't see it that way. So we have to realize there's many different, it's perception, it's how we look at things. And when you take the judgment out of it, to judge not, then we can look at it dispassionately and we can come up with the creative solutions.
You know, while I'm thinking about it, Lewis, let's get in your website and ways that people can get in touch with you.
Okay. Well, the website is lewiselbingerforcongress.com. It's still a little bit under construction. We're going to have a button in there about the future of agriculture. I'm going to have my science advisors put articles and videos on the subject of soil regeneration that you and I were talking about. So that's not there yet, but it's hot up at the top of our agenda. I'll be putting up statements about issues. I'm aligning a lot of my issue statements on gun control and things like that with Bernie Sanders. Because remember, my position is that this is not about me and this is not about Bernie Sanders. It's about the movement. You told me that you had attended one of Sanders' rallies, and I attended one too in Michigan. And there was a great feeling of hope and a great feeling of interest and positive energy that especially the young people have, that the idea showing that we can make the world work for 100% of humanity. Now, I studied with Buckminster Fuller in 1971 at the World Game, of course, at University of Detroit. And Bucky Fuller said that we can transform weaponry into livingry, and that's a word he seems to have coined, by using comprehensive scientific design. And that was his approach to all problems. He said, you don't solve a problem, as Einstein said, you don't solve a problem on the level of the problem. You have to create a new model to make the old model obsolete. You don't change reality by fighting it. That's exactly right. We don't change reality by fighting it. We change it by creating a new model that makes the old model obsolete. And that's what the thinkers that I respect do. Now, my political heroes are Gandhi, Martin Luther King, John F. Kennedy, John Lennon, and Nelson Mandela. Those are the ones who really, Gandhi stood up to empire. David Corton has a book called The Great Turning, and he talks, the subtitle is From Empire to Earth Community. And as a congressperson, as a representative of Congressional District 1, I want to represent the Earth community and help to as painlessly as possible, guide the transition from empire to Earth community. And Earth community includes everyone. Bucky Fuller said to love is to include. Everyone's included. That's why I say 100%. It's not adversarial. We're all in this together. We're going to sink or swim together. And I think we're going to swim and we should do very well. This is my approach.
Yeah, and I think you brought up Gandhi. One of the things that he said was when he was doing the march about the salt, he was like 2 or 3 days into the march and he got all of these people marching and it was a big deal. And one morning he said, you know, I'm not going to march anymore. And they said, what do you mean you're not going to march anymore? He says, my goal isn't consistency, it's truth. And I think the truth was he was tired probably, you know, but this is where we have to guide ourselves and not necessarily base everything on our past, because our past is what got us to where we are, which isn't the best place. I like the analogy of a caterpillar becoming a butterfly, because I was talking to Bruce Lipton. He said about imaginal cells. Have you ever heard this?
Yeah, we
talked about it. Yeah, the imaginal cells are us. We are the planetary cells that are envisioning a new pattern of being and holding that pattern and using the old caterpillar regime and reorganizing it around this new pattern. We can't just smash it out of existence because we need it. I mean, imagine the military, what a powerful force they would be in the world, delivering food and going to places that are hit hard by tornadoes and hurricanes and earthquakes. And they have an infrastructure that's so strong and so vast and can be used for so much good in the new way of looking at the world. So
precisely.
I've
seen this in myself.
Yeah. You brought up something about you brought up something about gun control. So let's just touch on that. Because for me, in a perfect world, if we didn't have guns, it really wouldn't matter. But the world's not perfect. If somebody comes up to me that I don't quite trust, and I have a gun and they have a gun, and they tell me to put my gun down, I'm more than willing to do that. But I would have to say, you first, then I'll put my gun down. And I think we're at a point right now where so many people don't trust what's going on. And then we get stories about mass school shootings, but we don't get the truth. The truth being that every single one of these kids that go to school and do a mass shooting are either on pharmaceutical drugs or coming off of pharmaceutical drugs. We're not really hitting the real problem. And the real problem isn't the guns so much. It's the minds and the mindset and the people that's involved in these movements. What do you think about gun control?
Well, you've sort of laid it out that it's a complicated, multifaceted approach. To make a joke, there's no magic bullet for this.
Yeah.
The first thing I did was I wanted to see what Bernie Sanders said about it, and I like what he said. He said, you have to make a differentiation between rural and urban communities, that the solution for a rural community is different than the solution for an urban community because the problem is actually different. I personally don't think we need assault weapons or assault ammunition. We don't need automated ammunition. It's not needed. It's not something that's necessary. And the background checks, of course, I think there's starting to be unanimity among everyone about background checks. But the NRA seems to be running on greed and fear. And the kids in Florida who are standing up and saying, no, we have to protect, we have to be protected, are challenging the greed and the fear. And that's what essentially my campaign is doing in standing up to the current situation and the current regime. I'm saying, let's not be run on greed and fear. Let's run on the creative solutions that come from working together, from harmony and from balance. This is where I'm coming from. So did I answer your question? I think that there's a lot in there. It's multifaceted. I would align myself with Bernie Sanders' position on this, because remember, I'm representing the movement. And I want to be in line with the movement.
Yeah, and I think, well, for instance, the kid that did the Columbine shooting years ago, he broke 17 local, state, and federal gun restriction laws. The laws that we have, we're not enforcing them correctly or uniformly. And traditionally, the government's idea is to come up with more laws. But we have to look at actually, what are we doing? And what's the state of mind in people that are committing these atrocities with guns? And like you say, we don't need assault rifles. There's a big difference between a bolt action rifle that you can take out deer hunting and an automatic weapon that is designed to kill massive amounts of people as quick as possible. There's a big difference there. And I think actually we have plenty of guns on this planet if we'd stop making them forever, there would still be plenty of guns.
Well, as you said, we both agree, it's a multifaceted thing. I want to point out the mental health aspects of it. And you said the pharmaceutical aspects of it, which ties into the mental health aspects. This is another layer and another facet of the problem that we have to really pay attention to mental health. When people feel alienated and they don't feel included, they can go off into their own world and become eccentric. And from that eccentricity, they can go into becoming violent and destructive in the ways that we've seen. And as you said, too, the pharmaceuticals are something that we have to look at very carefully, that it's all part of the regenerative agriculture, is getting back to the land. It isn't just about the food and the soil. It's also about the health and the wealth of rural communities, that the rural communities should not be mired in poverty and debt, that the rural communities need to be vibrant. And they're the ones who provide the energy that all of us need in order to live our lives.
You know, Lewis, we only have about 6 minutes left, but I have to ask you about this too. Because I really follow what Ron Paul talks about with the Federal Reserve. First of all, it's they create wealth by creating debt. Every fiat money system in history, every single one of them, turns out to be just nothing more than a Ponzi scheme that collapses. Almost all of the countries that we're dropping bombs on right now are the countries that's not part of the Federal Reserve fiat money system. And a lot of people don't realize that when you bring up Federal Reserve and our money system, they don't realize there's over 200 countries that we've sort of swooped into this system that are completely dependent on our Federal Reserve. And the countries that are saying no are the ones that we're actually going to war with. Maybe it's for oil, maybe it's for other reasons, religious reasons, but by coincidence, it's the ones that's not part of the Federal Reserve system. What do you think about the Federal Reserve, and how are we going to get out of this? Because I think we all know it doesn't take an academic education in finance anymore. Matter of fact, we brought somebody, Heinberg here, Heinberg, brought him here to Chico to give a talk. And he's a financial expert. And I asked him, said, how do you know our financial system is going to collapse? And I was expecting some long, convoluted answer. He says, I have a calculator. He says, if you're a mathematician and you know about finances, it doesn't take a genius to figure this out. You can only push it so far. And now we've pushed it to the limit and past the limit. What would you do in regarding the Federal Reserve?
Okay, that's a good question. I've got two master's degrees. One of them is an MBA degree in computer science, in which we studied money and the creation of wealth. And I have to tell you, the honest truth is, it is based on debt, as you said, and the examples that the professors gave in class were I was able to reproduce on the test and get good marks. I had a 3.875 average out of 4. So I could repeat the answers back, but to be perfectly honest, I never understood it. Even though I got the right answer and I could tell you how wealth is created through debt, I could explain it to you, but I never understand how it actually happened. I never understood. It didn't make sense to me. And so we're still answering these questions. Once again, there's nothing that Lewis Elbinger is going to do in Congress that's going to change this, except to work with the Progressive Caucus to make sure that we wean ourselves down from debt. When Bill Clinton left office, we had a budget surplus. Honestly, Rahasia, I never thought I'd hear those words in my lifetime. Budget surplus. I want to get back there. I want to have a budget surplus. I want to reduce military spending by 50%, take a quarter of those savings and pay down the national debt, take the other quarter to give us Medicare for all and college for all. That we can what Bucky Fuller said, redirect weaponry into livingry. This is my whole approach to everything. And I would do this in conjunction and in collaboration with my colleagues who would also have the same goal. We'd share the same goal and the same end. So the Federal Reserve, of course, created in 1913, is a symptom of the problem. And at the time, remember, evil is good, which has outlived its usefulness. So at one time, it might have been the perfect solution to a problem. Today, in 2018. It's not. So we have to get together and we have to come up with the more elegant solution to this problem. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. It's not going to be easy, though, Lewis. It's not going to be easy. But if we can get everybody more educated to the problem, you know, it reminds me of, like, again, the Wizard of Oz. Once the curtain is pulled back, it changes everything. Like, most of the power, the corrupt right. power that exists in our world today exists because of secrecy. And like JFK said, it's secrecy is repugnant. It's evil. It's like no good. There's no reason to have that extreme secrecy.
Can I take it one step further and say it's not really possible? Because as we develop telepathic abilities. And as you develop your psychic and your telepathic abilities, you'll be able to see when people are lying to you. They won't be able to hide it. So for that reason alone, secrecy is useless. It's not going to be possible to keep secrets. So let's just adopt that and live your life. I try to live my life so that what I'm doing in private would also, I could be public about it and not be ashamed of it. And if everybody was living that kind of a life, then the whole idea of secrets, I think it's more of a 20th century idea, secrecy. Also, think of the money we could save if we abolished things like the CIA. Just think of that. We don't even know how much it costs. And the CIA hasn't really, what they call, quote, intelligence, unquote, hasn't really been useful either. They didn't predict the fall of the Soviet Union. They didn't really predict the rise of the Internet. There's a lot of things that have happened in the world which were not predicted by the CIA. Our government has 16 or 17, quote, intelligence, unquote, agencies. I know when I was in the government, there were 16, but I think I've read since that there's now 17. We don't need that. Intelligence helped us to win World War II by cracking the code of the Japanese. We were able to really advance, to shorten the war. So there is a use for it, but it's a military use. Therefore, the DIA, the Defense Intelligence Agency, should be the lead. And the CIA hasn't been proven, in my mind, to be very useful. And God knows what we're spending on it. I visited Langley once as a Foreign Service officer. I'm telling you, the parking lot looks like a Porsche dealership. That means everybody working there is driving a Porsche. Well, doesn't that tell you something about the place? Yeah. So I'm going to ask hard questions about what we call, quote, intelligence, unquote.
Yep. You hit it on the head, Lewis. And I think as time goes on, all of this is going to start coming out. The truth does eventually come out. And like you say, we are psychic to some degree, because I hear people say to me, well, if UFOs were really real, the government couldn't keep that a secret. And I look at them and tell them, they haven't kept it a secret. Like, wake up. The truth is out there.
I would direct such people to the work of Dr. Stephen Greer, because he's kind of like the pioneer in this area. And it doesn't mean that I buy and believe everything he says, but I'm saying let's look at it with an open mind and a scientific attitude. Let's not close our minds to anything. Actually, the idea that we're alone in the universe is a stranger idea than the idea that we're not alone, yeah. In my opinion, because there's life and abundance everywhere.
Yeah, whether we're alone or not alone, either way, it's an awesome thought that to even think that we might be alone in this vast universe. That just seems so illogical to me. So, Lewis,
to me, it's a crazy.
What would you like to leave our listening audience with? What's your final thoughts?
Well, let me go back to my three messages: government with heart, vote your conscience, and bridging the divide. Those are the three things that I'm talking about. Voting your conscience addresses the question of people who say, oh, a Green Party can't win. It's impossible. You have to either be Democrat or Republican. And I'm saying, no, you have to go inside and ask yourself, what really represents your values and your interests? Remember, the reason I'm running is because my values and my interests were not represented, and I felt they should be on the ballot. You have a choice between red and blue, and you're presented that as that choice, that's it. And I'm saying, no, there's a third possibility. We can have green in the middle. We can take the best ideas from the red and the best ideas from the blue and put them together and get something that people can get behind. So that's what I want to leave it. Let's bridge the divide, vote your conscience, and
and go into the heart where life exists and where life flourishes.
That's a good place to leave it, Lewis. Thank you for your time.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for joining us in another Spiritual Activist Radio Show with Rahasia Uncensored. And remember, get out there and vote. Get out there and do something. Let's work together to change this world and get behind the people that are out there doing the same thing. So thank you, and I will be talking to you again in a couple of weeks.